card.
I play Dark Magician. Welcome to Such Good Shoot, the podcast about anything and everything in the world of wrestling. Tonight, we have Shane.
Hi, I'm Shane.
We have Dozer.
Hi. You're Dozer. Yeah, you're Dozer.
And Isaac. We don't know where Isaac is, legitimately. So
we totally lost Isaac.
Welcome to Such Good Shoot. You know what? Well, we're just going to get rolling tonight. Shane, you got anything you're drinking?
I'm just lightly sipping on some Bush heavies tonight. Okay. It's a low effort show.
Yeah. Tonight I am drinking some of that ice cold well water from Lovettsville, Virginia. From my own personal spring.
I believe that's called your kitchen tap.
Yes. And you know what that, and I am also smoking on Aromacraft Intemperance Whiskey Rebellion.
Oh, I remember when those came out.
Yeah, they're good shit.
Those were a big deal. Everybody wanted those things.
Yeah, this is the special Perfecto shape.
Are they still being made regularly? From the stash? Okay. The Whiskey Rebellion is still.
Yeah. They generally release the Perfecto maybe once a year, but the others are readily available all the time. But I think that brings us to our first segment of the night. Sheik of the week.
It's the Iron Sheik of the week. I didn't even think to look because we were too busy trying to figure out where Isaac was. If we go together like Rama Lama Lama, Ka Dinga Da Dinga,
we dong, go together like Rama Lama Lama Lama, Ka Dinga Dinga Dong.
Then you are a dumb fucking son of a bitch, and you can go fuck yourself forever.
Ooh, man. Sheik coming out here with the Grease reference tonight.
Oh, that is what that's from. I was saying it, and I was like, I feel like this should be said to a cadence. And, like, I know this.
It's Grease, baby. So slick your hair back, grab your poodle skirt, and let's go. Well, you know what? You know, we've had a week in wrestling. It's been a week. MJF is out there. Praising everything WWE does, which it's MJF. It's a work somehow, some way, some shape, some form. I don't think he's actually praising them. I think he is working.
Yeah, it's oddly close to the Jericho Appreciation Society, though.
That was my feeling, but...
Yeah. Yeah. I watched Dynamite this week. It was pretty good. Darby Allin got thrown down a flight of stairs. And Jeff Hardy did a big flip off of something tall.
Hey, at least there were people in attendance.
Yes, yes. Yeah, he didn't do anything stupid to no audience, which was nice. Yeah, I know it was just a good episode. It was solid.
I'll take it. And, you know, there's more speculation going around about what's going to happen with Ring of Honor. And a lot of the people, I think, are right. They're echoing what we said initially. It's going to be something. It's not going to be earth-shattering.
Yeah, I think it's just going to operate as kind of an NXT sort of role. You know what I mean? Maybe not exactly like that. Like, I don't think they'll make it look like a feuder system, but yeah, I bet you there's going to be a lot of younger AEW talent over there honing their craft. I mean, you can see it already even the Supercard of Honor. They booked Jay Lethal versus Lee Shoddy Moriarty Shoddy, Big Shoddy guy. And it's like, what did he do to deserve that match?
literally nothing.
Yeah, no, and it's fine. But at that point, I was like, okay, that makes sense. Because the two big matches, well, obviously, have your biggest stars. That's, you know, Bandito versus John Gresham. And then, obviously, Briscoe's versus FTR. And then I think it's just going to be, you know, weirder, lower-end stuff, you know, at the bottom of the card, which is fine.
Yeah, that's kind of like where they should be for some of that stuff. And I'll take it. I would like somehow if they could work it where the low and mid card is full of a lot of up-and-coming talent, but they manage to maintain the main event as a top-tier match.
Yeah, no, I totally agree. I think you, in order to make that work, you have to have legitimate stars over there.
Yes. Because I would just hate to see the Ring of Honor world title delegated to a developmental title. It still means a lot to a lot of people.
Yeah, no, 100%. I mean, it's the way a lot of people feel about the NXT title. Like no insult to Bron Breakker or Dolph Ziggler, but like that title doesn't belong in those guys' hands. You know what I mean? Like look at everyone else, you know, who's held it and like the situation surrounding them earning it. You know what I mean?
Yes. You know, and with NXT, like I feel Breakker, he is amazing, but I feel he was hot-shotted a bit too fast.
And Dolph Ziggler just doesn't feel like he belongs. Like
it doesn't make sense for how they've done it. Nor should he have ever won the title.
Yeah, no. I mean, I don't have an issue with Dolph Ziggler winning championships, but like he needs to do so on the main roster. Like everyone's bitched for years that Dolph Ziggler's been underutilized. So it's nice to see him getting treated like a big deal. But you switched NXT to NXT 2.0 to build younger stars faster and to like home grow them more rather than, you know, having these non-Vince guys hot-shotted to the main roster. Vince doesn't like them. They get released and everyone gets mad. And now you have Dolph Ziggler as the champion of that. Like, okay, I guess.
Yeah, it's exactly what I didn't want of the 2.0. I wanted 2.0 to be a return to the good old fashioned, hey man, this is developmental world. But I also would, you know, shorten it an hour and maybe take it off national TV. But that's just me.
Yeah.
It like NXT 2.0 has great talent and there's a lot of great up and comers. They do not have 2 hours worth of great matches on a weekly basis.
They don't even have an hour's worth of great matches on a weekly basis with that roster right now. I mean, a lot of the people that they have wrestle weekly are like super. I mean, I know where I said this earlier, but they're like super regional, like, you know, actual wrestling talent, you know, wrestlers that they might have charisma or they might have, you know, the body or athleticism, you know what I mean? But like, they don't have the actual wrestling skills yet. Some of it's really hard to watch.
Yeah. Yeah. I completely agree with that. But, you know, speaking of wrestling shows, I saw a tweet from somebody out there who proposed a great wrestling show that we need as of yesterday. And that is Kitchen Nightmares. With William Regal going around critiquing all these indie shows and trying to make them better. I just fucking love this idea.
That would be funny.
It, like, you could just imagine Regal in full heel Regal form. Just walking into these places, making his faces. Maybe you'd bring Brian and Moxley along as his experts to help improve some people. Have Moxley training the hardcore guys, having Ryan train the technical guys for a night or two.
Yeah, or they just invade all of the indie scenes and ruin all of their main events for 2 months straight. They're killing the business.
I love that too.
Can you imagine that? They just go on this death crusade like 5 nights a week, popping up in every like random indie. Like they pop up at an event with 15 people and they just beat the piss out of like everyone in the main event and just leave. They just do it for 2 months.
And you somehow have this all add on to their AEW win streak for some reason.
Oh, it's like a cross between the 24/7 championship and you know the game that's literally called the game where if you think about the game you lose.
Yes, I am well aware of this game.
Yes, it's like that except Daniel Bryan and Moxley just beating up. That's awesome.
I'm not going to complain. You got anything?
Not really, man. I'm like I said, it's a weird show this week. Yeah.
So you know what? Let's just get straight into it. It's time for our main event. Hey, I even got the right button. And you know what? The first thing I have to say as we get into this, I tried to develop a new non-biased rating system. I'm going to give you the total tonight, but you can go down to our website, www.suchgoodshoot.com, tomorrow morning, and you can see my detailed ratings where I have rated every match on technicality, excitement, cleanliness, entertainment, and coherence. And just the, you know, technicality is how much technical moves they did in actual wrestling moves. Excitement, I had a high flying, but you know, you could have an exciting match that isn't high flying, a lot of fast paced stuff. So that's what that's for. Cleanliness, did they do the moves clean? Were there botches? Was it bad? Entertainment, just was it fucking entertaining? You could have a bad match. This is entertaining. And coherence, did they tell a story? If they were selling an injury, did they continue selling it past that point? Just did it make logical sense?
The Cornette category.
More or less, yes. But all in all, it's to try and keep the ratings, to keep an average rating actually average, have a bad match be an actually bad match, and have a great match be a legit great match. So, trying to balance it out and trying to come up with a system to keep my ratings somewhat consistent, because they never have been.
Just gonna keep getting more complicated and more complicated up until it's like an 100-point system where each point like means something different.
Oh, I'm never fucking doing that. That's too much work. I do have a question from this show though. Did you remember Warcraft was a movie?
No.
I saw that first ad and I went, oh yeah, that was a thing.
I'll tell you what I did think about, though, is they make multiple references. This is the first NXT takeover of 2016. And I was like, I remember watching this show. Like, I remember vividly at this time they called at the end. And I was like, no, like, Vince, you can't do this. And this was 2016. And I was like, holy shit, it's been 6 years.
Yeah.
It's been 6 years since this aired.
It had a, at least it had a great theme.
Oh, dude, I love it. It's like my favorite pay-per-view theme of all time, at least recurring. The end is here.
Oh, it's beautiful. But, you know, that brings us to our first match of the night, where we had the perfect 10, Ty Dillinger, taking on Andrade Cien Almas, because he had way too many names back then.
And Mr. Go ahead. Sorry.
Before we even get started, I just have to state that in this outfit that Andrade wore during his time in NXT, man, he really looked like someone cosplaying as a Godfather stripper.
Yeah. It was so weird seeing him like back to this. Because, I mean, I remembered that he had the really weird, bad face run, and then he became Andrade. And, you know, the slick back hair and, you know, everything else pretty shortly after this. But yeah, he came out and I was like, Andrade Cien Almas. Look at this dude. All right. Yeah, I remember all of it now. It's weird how much they referred to him as just Cien. Yeah. And like that's the first name that got dropped.
Thankfully, because that was a mouthful.
Yeah, I don't even... Was he even Cien when he wins the NXT title in a couple years? I don't even think so. I think he was just Andrade Almas.
I think so. Maybe it was there in like the Tron, but they never really said it.
Yeah, I think that when they dropped that middle name is when they turned him. But
all in all, the change to just Andrade, he is one of the few guys that has truly benefited from name chopping.
Oh, no, 100%. It had to be such a weird thing for him, though, because he was, like, a masked wrestler forever. So, like, trying to, like, figure out how to work a crowd with, like, all of your face and obviously just, you know, have your face and head be seen, I'm sure was a weird thing that I'm sure they were like, what are you going to do? And he was like, I can just go be a good guy. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
You know, they're like, oh, you're good looking, you know, sure, go on.
And it's kind of like how I wish in AEW, you know how he comes out with the black mask on and all?
Yes.
I kind of wish that he would have like an alternate personality, a human type of thing. When he wears the mask, he is this super heel, super badass dude in the ring.
Yeah, I mean, it's just weird because other than NXT, obviously they talked about it on the show, you know, and obviously Mexico and Japan. It just seems like none of these companies really want to strap a rocket under it. You know what I mean? Like he's like in a feud with Matt Hardy right now. You know what I mean?
Yeah, that's kind of like the death knell.
Yeah, I mean, and like it's unfortunate because Jeff's also involved in it now, but he's just involved in this messy, like, you know, faction versus faction and, you know, whatever. Just none of these companies have any clue what to do with them still.
Yeah, and I praise AEW. They have done a lot of great things with factions. The Hardy family officer, the Andrade family officer, whatever the fuck their name is now. I never got, they make no sense. They always just look like a bunch of random dudes.
Yeah, and they lost to Stang.
It just makes no sense to me. But as for this match, you know, the crowd was really behind Ty, which isn't surprising because they really love, you know, everybody knows they loved him in NXT and he never did shit on the main roster except constantly appearing as number 10 in the Royal Rumble.
Hey, people yelled 10.
Yeah. It all in all, it was an okay match. It was good for an opener. Got the crowd a little warmed up, but it was not like I felt anything super amazing.
Yeah. The first thing I noticed was how lukewarm the crowd was to Andrade when he first walked out.
It was his wrestling debut.
Yeah, it definitely was. And, you know, who he was before was definitely like, I don't want to say super indie stuff because those aren't indie companies, but it's definitely like an internet smark, you know what I mean, guy to be like, yeah, I'm excited for him. And even at this point in NXT, they weren't really getting those kind of people, you know, I mean, you had Samoa Joe and Finn Balor. Yeah. You know, and Finn obviously knew Japan, but Finn's a, you know, even then was a huge name, and Samoa Joe and Nakamura. But they did a really good job of putting Andrade over as far as being an in-ring worker. And he very quickly got the crowd to start reacting to like him and what he did. I think the the big turning point was when he does the like the sideways backwards dive into the ropes and then hangs and looks cool.
Yeah, so that was a great spot. And for him as a whole character, he gets a lot when he gets Zelina Vega in a little bit.
Yeah.
Because at this point, you know, you have a masked wrestler coming in. He's not really that used to working the crowd, so having a mouthpiece was a great decision early on.
Yeah, I mean, and when he finally found a character, you know what I mean? It went well, because this was just, I'm a wrestling guy. I'm cute.
I'm trying to think to all the NXT debuts, and I think at least the Full Sail crowd was way more tuned in to the Japanese scene than the Mexican scene.
Yeah, I mean, but he was what did they say? Like Intercontinental Champion in New Japan. So, yeah. I mean, he did. I really think losing the mask hurt, you know, reaction for a lot, you know, for a lot of people. And a lot of people honestly might not have realized it.
Yeah. That's highly plausible. So all in all, what'd you give this match?
Like I said, I thought that it accomplished what it needed to. It put Andrade over because he wasn't at the beginning of the match. You know, it was just a solid face versus face kind of, you know, exhibition match. Like, I don't know. It was like a 2.75.
Okay. You know, I'm right there with you. This was an average match as far as matches go. It deserved to be on the card. It was a great opener. I gave it a 2.6.
Okay, so we're going like actual decibel points now. Understood.
Well, as I said, it's literally the average of the other scores, so it can actually become a random score. I only use point. I'm only using half numbers. But the final score can become a little long. And Big Daddy Meltzer gave it a 2.75. So,
hey,
close enough for me. I'll drink. Plus, it's water. So, what do I have to worry about? So, that brings us to the tag match of the night where, you know, you don't need a tag division. You have a tag division if you have these two teams. And that was The Revival and American Alpha. And it is hard for me to just not really love American Alpha.
And yeah, they're...
Go.
Oh, yeah, no, I was just going to say, I mean, people weren't reacting to tag team matches in WWE like this, you know, and then they hadn't been. For a long time. So seeing these two teams that clearly cared about tag team wrestling and use tag team wrestling, you know, as a priority, you know, and did all of the double team moves and you know, worked on the chemistry. I mean, it was really something special.
It really was, and that's where I kind of had to, this actually made me change one of my categories. Because initially, excitement was called aerial work. But then I watched this match and went, no, this is exciting, but they're not really high-flying or anything. They're just exciting. It's modern, but with old-school mentality. It worked very well. I really enjoyed the use of the tag. The ref never got overly distracted where he's talking to somebody for like 10 minutes, which that shit bothers me. And I really loved it. FTR is amazing as always. Like, they just know their shit. It was pretty damn good.
Yeah. One thing that I personally didn't like, but I can't really knock them for, given crowd reaction, I didn't like how many times Jason Jordan and Chad Gable did, like, the sliding knees into the hard cam and the, you know, the big, ah, but like every time they did it, the crowd popped even bigger. So like, I think I'm just a hater.
And I saw it as they're the cocky faces.
Yeah, no. Like, I mean, like I said, it worked. So I, you know, I'm just being nitpicky. Yeah. But American Alpha were literally Team Angle 2.0, maybe a little bit more muscle, a little bit less, you know, a little bit less fly. And then you had, you know, the Revival, which, especially at this point on, you know, national, you know, not national, I guess this was on the network, but, you know, on major promotions, they were the closest thing to the Horsemen as you were going to see at this point. You know, they worked on limbs and did all of the technical things right. You know, worked the referee well, but like you said, not too much. Chad Gable did what Chad Gable does best and got the hell beaten out of him for 10 minutes. You know, Jason Jordan hot tag.
That was a hot tag.
Yeah, crowd goes nuts. He slides again behind the referee's back. They, I can't remember what led into it. You know, Shatter Machine. 1, 2, 3. Revival are tag team champions. I liked it enough to give it a 4.5.
Well, you know, I'm kind of right there with you because I have a 4.4. And good old Daddy Meltzer gave it a 4.
Very nice. And it's also worth noting that after the match, Authors of Pain debut.
And I remember that just being a big deal, seeing Paul Ellerig there. And they were monsters.
Yeah, I mean, and like legitimately nobody had any fucking clue who they were. Like everyone was mad because they were chanting, "Who are you?" And the camera's on Paul Ellering. And then everyone in the audience was like, "No, we knew who Paul Ellering was, you fucking idiots. We were chanting it at the massive men who just beat the piss out of American Alpha who are hanging out with Paul Ellering."
Yeah. And you know what the sad thing is? Still nobody knows who they are.
Yeah, pretty much. I mean, they're gone. They moved back to, like, I think they're from Algeria or something.
Yeah. They were here and then they're gone.
We're headed straight towards fucking DIY versus Authors of Pain versus the Revival.
I don't remember that match, but ooh, that sounds good.
Oh, I do. The there's a sequence in that match that might be my favorite sequence in literal NXT history. So okay. Whenever we make it there, I'll mark.
I can't wait to get there. And that brings us to Shinsuke taking on Johnny Garbanzo. I mean, Austin Aries.
Yeah, Johnny Garbanzo.
He just really looks like a Wish.com Johnny Gargano in this.
Yeah, I mean, he does. And also, like, I wish he was just Johnny Gargano because Johnny Gargano wasn't a huge piece of shit, at least outwardly. I can't speak for the man himself, but, you know, at least he hides it well if that's the case.
Yeah.
This was really good.
Yeah, it's the kind of match you'd expect from these two. Like, love him or hate him, Austin Aries is good in the ring.
Oh, he's incredible.
When he wants to be.
Yeah, no, I mean, he's a guy that has only ever been held back by him, by himself.
Yes. He could easily be, if he wasn't a douchebag, like an AJ Styles type guy at this point.
No, 100%. And AJ Styles thinks the fucking world's flat. I mean...
Not a douche about it.
Yeah, no. I'm just saying that, like, AJ Styles himself is a flat earther. And Austin Aries is so much worse.
Look, you look at who is at the top of these cards, you realize how many dumbasses there are up there, and then you realize that everybody in control of your narrative is stupider than all of them can be.
Well, Austin Aries is linked to control your narrative, so it just makes sense.
Mm-hmm. I'm just saying, like, it's just bad. You know, The only thing I would say about this match is I did find the story a little bit harder to follow. There was a lot of good moves, but it didn't always seem to flow the best.
Yeah, it was kind of weird from the start, too, because he comes down with the ribs taped. And both Corey Graves and Tom Phillips are like, we didn't know anything about this. And then there was no, like, video or anything to accompany it. So I'm like, is Austin Aries just trying to work the, like, the crowd for no, like, you know what I mean? Like why is there nothing to accompany this? And if it isn't supposed to be mentioned, why are the announcers talking about how they don't know what it is? Yeah. You know what I mean? Like this doesn't make sense. But it was a great match as far as, you know, the actual work goes. You had Austin Aries constantly trying to submit Nakamura and employing the, you know, the high flying and the fast pace. His suicide dive in the bottom rope, you know, in between the bottom ropes is very cool. I love Nakamura the entire time, just looking for his strikes, you know, like that. And that's the whole thing, you know, the entire time is him just looking to kick his head off. I like the Death Valley driver on the apron.
It's the hardest part of the ring.
Yes, he did exclaim that it was the hardest part of the ring. And yeah, this was a just solid NXT TakeOver match. I think that clearly the right person won. I liked it enough to give it a 3.5.
Okay. I will say this. The excitement and entertainment value of this match really bumped it up a bit. I gave it a 4.15.
Oh.
But that's because I was very entertained and very excited during the match.
Well, hey.
So it worked out quite well for them, and big old Daddy Meltzer gave it a 3.75.
Me and Dave Meltzer are really close this week.
I think this next match might be where we see the biggest divergence in scores.
Okay.
And that is where we have Asuka taking on Nia Jax. And, like, right off the bat, it just makes me think about how they never really let a women's wrestler be the monster in the major promotions. Like, they let Nia go in this match for quite a bit, and it was probably one of her better matches because she was able to play the stiff monster.
Yeah, I mean, she was a stiff monster, just to be fair.
But that's what she should be trying to wrestle as, if that's what you are.
Well, no, when I was watching it earlier, I was thinking, you know, she feels like, you know, a big monster heel from the 80s. I mean, I was thinking that independently of you saying anything. I mean, they made this match work. I think it was too long. I think that Nia Jax at this point, and obviously just continuing, wasn't ready for being in that spot. Never would be. You know, all credit to Asuka, who clearly was paying attention to the weeks leading up to this because the commentators were constantly alluding to her doing things that had worked previously, but other people couldn't, like, capitalize on. Like, at one point, she did, like, a flying guillotine, and Corey was like, this is how all of the smart women, you know, have almost taken Nia Jax out. You know, it's not worked for them. But, yeah, like I said, it was just too long. Nia wasn't ready. I guess it helped legitimize both of them. But for what it was, and like I said, especially for, you know, the relative length of it, I only liked it enough to give it maybe a 2.5.
Okay, so average.
Yeah, I mean, it was there.
I will say I did think watching the match on TV, it was a little long. But I will also say that it was probably long on purpose, and that was to give the crowd a little bit larger rest during the show, because they weren't as hot, and they never were going to be as hot, and you have a big-ass match coming right after this that they want them on their feet. They want them burning hot for. So they wanted to give a little bigger rest. You know, you knew we were never going to get anything very technical out of these people. You knew Asuka was going to do 99% of the work, and she did. I gave it a 3.3. With mainly just the coherence of the storytelling, as you alluded to, really boosting that score quite a bit.
Yeah, it was definitely a good pro wrestling match. If you are looking at pro wrestling from the eyes of Jim Cornette, you know what I mean? And this is true heel face dynamic, and they let that, you know, just basic good versus evil storyline play out.
Yeah, that worked really well. And big old Daddy Meltzer kind of split the difference and gave it a 2.75.
Yeah, that's it's a responsible rating. He's been good this week.
Yeah. Which that brings us to our main event, where we have the Demon, Finn Balor, taking on the Samoan Joseph for the NXT title in a steel cage.
The Samoan man they refer to as Joseph. Yeah, this shit kicked ass. I don't even like steel cage matches normally. Like, honestly, I think they're like upper end of most overrated match styles in the current, you know, general professional wrestling landscape. But these two just beat the crap out of each other.
Yeah.
The steel cage wasn't used a whole lot at first. I mean, it was used kind of sparingly throughout the match to begin with. But I think they did that on purpose, because I think the cage was more or less there to provide like an oppressive atmosphere to them, because they had fought everywhere anyway, you know, they had fought everywhere and anywhere they could before to begin with. So having the steel cage around them made the match, like I said, feel claustrophobic and just entrapping. The violence escalated and escalated.
If this was the Attitude Era, this would have been a boiler room brawl.
Yeah, I mean,
it's there for the atmosphere. It's not necessarily there for its destructive capabilities.
Yeah, and like, but they did end up using it more, especially towards the end of the match. I like towards the end of the match where within the span of a couple minutes, they had Joe knocking Balor off the top rope and Balor like sliding in between the ropes in the cage, and then Joe falling. And then they had it like reversed where, you know, Joe fell off. Joe pulled him off and then Balor, like crotched himself. I thought that was a cool, series of spots. Yeah. They just beat the crap out of each other.
Everything was there. They told a good story, but you know, this is a more or less a legendary story in wrestling between these two. They've gone back and forth so many times. And it just works every time they go against each other.
And this one didn't get stopped a bunch in the middle of the match.
Yeah. And you know what? This is also the time you can sit there and go, oh, hey, look. WWE recently told us.
No, correct, yes. I loved the crowd towards the end of the match chanting up at Finn to try to get him to coup de grace off the, you know, like the top of the cell.
Yeah.
And then like a minute and a half later, it was Samoa Joe muscle busting Finn avalanche style.
That like it fucking hurt.
Yeah. Yeah. I mean, it looked awful. At one point, Finn just absolutely kicks Samoa Joe in the face, and they show it in slow-mo like 6 times in a row. He's like standing on the top rope and Joe is right in front of the rope or behind it or whatever, and he kind of just soccer punts him. Yeah, I mean, it was just all around good. I don't like the door stipulation. But
I don't like the escaping, period.
I don't mind over the top rope because that's like you actually have to perform something.
Yes.
Walking out the door makes no sense because it just nullifies the point of the stipulation to begin with. But they only sold those things a couple times, and a majority of what they did was just based around beating the piss out of each other.
I can get behind the door stipulation, but the door doesn't open. The door is locked. You literally have to like break the door down to escape through it is how I could see it actually working well.
Yeah, but the whole we're just gonna open this door for you is like why?
Because they watched what fucking match did WCW have with the door and it'd be open for 10 seconds and probably War Games or some shit. They came up with a lot of bullshit matches.
Yeah, who knows? You have to ask Dusty. But I liked it enough to give it a 4.25.
Okay. I really like the match. It got a 4.75 from me.
Ooh.
Yeah, I probably should have hit him a little harder in the cleanliness because there were a couple less than perfect moves.
Hey, you were just watching the match, man. You were having a good time.
And I'm still tuning this rating system, so it could change in the future a little bit. But Big Old Daddy Meltzer was not quite as hot as we were on it. He gave it a 3.5.
Wow.
Yeah, which means his match of the night was the tag match.
I mean, I feel like, honestly, if you ask people what their favorite match of the night for this is, a majority of them will probably say the same thing, or it will be like a 50-50 split.
Yeah, they're kind of tied, really. And my big question for you, is it worth the watch?
I mean, there are better takeovers you can watch, but as far as you just throwing something on because you want to watch professional wrestling, I would say yes. I feel like the show as a whole is worth a watch.
Yes, and I am still working on my whole show ratings. Generally, I have it down to match composition, match order, how the crowd reacted. Was it like a big enough deal, made a big enough deal? And how was the production value? Still working on it. All in all, I thought the show was like 3.75 to a 4 as a whole. Which we'll watch again.
Yeah, something kind of like that. I would say maybe a probably like a 3.5 for me.
Yeah. My whole thing is like, if it's 4.5 and above, that is go out of your way to watch this.
Yeah, and I don't.
The 4.5 is kind of, watch it. If you got the time and nothing to do, watch it. So that's where my head's at.
Yeah, 100%. Like I said, I don't think there's anything like absolutely crucial on this show. Like in the course of NXT history, there's nothing on this show that is like, this is the greatest match you'll ever see, you know, of this category. But you can do much worse with 2 hours.
Yeah, and the only thing I would say, and it bumps it up a little on the must-watch scale, just because in the grand scheme of wrestling, there are so few American Alpha matches in the grand scheme. Since Jason Jordan's career was cut so short. And they are so good during this time that almost every match they're in is something you need to watch because you could literally watch their whole career in like a night.
Yeah, no, 100%. I mean, it's been nice seeing them, seeing them on this clip, and also, hello, Dark Sage.
What's the bold prediction? Let's hear it. Bold
prediction.
Hi, this is Fraser Crane. I'm listening. Look in my eyes, what do you see? Hello. Who knows? Maybe we'll get it. Maybe we'll answer it next week. Who knows? Maybe we'll never see it. But all in all, you know, good show. Next week, are we back? Next week's not, we're not at Mania yet. So next week.
Maybe we'll just have Isaac back next week. I mean, honestly, we need to find the third person on for the show.
Yeah.
Before anything else.
We do it. The search for the third person begins again. What's going to happen? We're going to find him. So maybe we'll have WWE, maybe we'll have WCW, but till next time, this has been such good shoot. That is Shane.
I'm Shane.
I'm still Dozer. And if you see Isaac, please let us know where he is. We're worried.
Yeah, tell him to write home.
Please. I saw how much it costs to get his face on milk cartons. I can't afford it.
Thank you for listening to this edition of Such Good Shoot. If you are on YouTube, please remember to like, subscribe, and ring that bell icon. Or subscribe to us on your favorite audio catcher. Or finally, if you're on Facebook, leave a comment, like the video, and make sure to share it out to all your friends. Until next time, we have been Such Good Shoot, and have a great day.
Hey, we're just going to call this the after show quickly, because Dark Sage answered our question. Roman beats Brock to unify the titles, then enters a month-long feud with a returning Cena leading into SummerSlam. And at SummerSlam, Heyman betrays Roman, and Lesnar returns to help Cena win number 17. Remember this when we get to SummerSlam. Heyman and Cena pull the ultimate double cross of Roman Reigns. I don't see it.
That's something else.
It would be immersive storytelling. It would be great. I don't see them doing it.
Russo is not booking right now, I don't think.
I could see Cena Roman for SummerSlam, but at the same time, I just don't see this path of the getting there. Nor do I see putting Cena over.
I mean, honestly, though, who knows, man? The WWE is an ever-changing landscape at all points right now, so.
Yeah. And, you know, I think that concludes our after show. Till next time, and remember, tune in next week at 10:05. Dark Sage will be here, and we're listening.